I don't think we can stress enough in the communities how important it is that the members of the community, and particularly those people that have been in power for a long time, recognize the value of including all of those people who have been traditionally left out.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you're listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hogg is spelled H-O-G-G. Mental health philanthropy is changing. For decades, the scene has been dominated by a handful of national funders and then regional players like the Hogg Foundation. Now, as we begin to broaden our lens to include all of the systems that impact mental health, collaboration is a word on everyone's lips. People are opening up to the possibilities of working together across sectors to affect change. And as with everything, there are effective and not so effective ways to do this. So what makes for a successful collaboration or collaborative? What types of problems can collaborative approaches help solve? How can leaders put the best of what we know about collaboration to work for their own organizations or for themselves? Katie Bourgeois is a senior consultant for Mission Capital, an organization specializing in providing resources and guidance to mission-driven organizations who are trying to tackle complex issues. She's joined by Tammy Hines, program officer and consumer and family liaison for the Hogg Foundation. We're here to talk about cross-sector collaboration and its role in addressing complex issues like mental health. Katie and Tammy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So to start, what do each of you see as the core elements of a successful collaboration? And what about mental health lends itself to this kind of approach?
Well, when I'm looking at collaborations, I really look for five elements to see whether I think that the collaboration is set up to be impactful in whatever it's trying to do. And one of the first ones is whether or not the collaboration has a shared set of goals that everybody on the collaborative or a partner within the group understands what those goals are and buys into what the goal is. Why are you meeting? Why are you coming together? And what are you trying to change? The second thing I look at is whether the stakeholders are there or actually there to participate and generate value. So are they engaged in the work and do they see that their participation actually has a purpose and creates value for the group? The third thing, which tends to be a more particular issue, is looking at whether or not the collaboration is doing some form of ongoing evaluation, and whether data is being used to drive that evaluation. So are you looking at the numbers and are you collecting the stories that can support the evaluation? The fourth thing is whether or not actions are emerging from people's involvement. So if a collaboration is making a lot of plans, but there's no action happening, then that's not going to be an impactful collaboration. And then the last one is for the collaborations that I've seen that are successful, there really needs to be an intentional guided process. Some organization or some individual needs to own responsibility for sort of forming the foundation and keeping the thing moving forward.
That's really helpful. As I was thinking through what some of the core elements might be, just from my perspective, I think a lot about inclusion and balance. And I feel like one of the things that is extremely important, particularly when you're developing a collaboration, is to really make sure that you're including a cross-section of people from the community. And by that, I mean a balance between those in power, those who have traditionally been in power, and those who can actually make change, with people who have traditionally been or historically been excluded and marginalized, and making sure that there's a really good balance between those two things. And so if you have it weighted too heavily on either side, then you don't have a goal that comes out of it that actually works for all of the community. So I think, to me, really thinking through who are those people and how do we make sure they get to the table is an extremely important piece. Then I think once you get people to the table, you really have to think about openness, listening, and vulnerability. Because one of the things I think we are asking of people is to come to the table, hear other people's stories, share your own stories, which of course can make people be in a vulnerable position, and make sure that you understand that different people have different worldviews and have different experiences that you haven't gone through. And so to sit back and hold judgment, suspend judgment for as long as you can, and really make sure that you're hearing people's experiences, I think is one of those tenets that has to be there in order for the group to come together and decide what's best for the collective group. So that's another thing. Then I think, you know, when I think specifically around mental health, I get excited about this because I think when people feel heard and when people feel understood, that is a natural increase in their positive mental health. It's an actual increase in the way they feel about their own well-being. So I think just by pulling people together, just by having these groups come together in the right way, it can increase a community's mental health.
Okay. And so the person who you just heard was Tammy Hines of the Hogg Foundation. Katie went first. Thank you both for that. And so this whole issue of openness and vulnerability, so one thing it leads me to think is that people and communities can be more or less ready to collaborate depending on the groundwork that has been laid and also what they've been made to expect about just how much they have to be willing to give to the process. And so my next question is, what are the most important things that communities can do? Or can be done with them to build their capacity for effective collaboration?
This is Katie, and I would say that I would say that from the very beginning, one of the things the community can do, and it references back to Tammy's comments a moment ago, is really bringing diverse stakeholders together to listen to each other and talk about the challenges and opportunities and solutions that they see within their community. People from different vantage points are going to see different challenges and they're going to see different opportunities. So getting them to come together and look across their organizations, across the community, and across the systems they're working in to establish that common understanding and common view of what is happening now and what the opportunities are for the future is a giant first step that communities can do.
And I'm going to jump in on that one. This is Tammy. I think that really thinking through who those representatives would be, you know, we want to make sure we're including faith-based, private businesses, public health and services, different educational systems. All of these different areas are impacted by well-being, impacted by mental health. And so if we're not including all of them, then we're really not looking at a community-wide approach.
Okay. And so people and organizations who work in mental health might have some vague sense that they ought to be working together. It's a massive undertaking, whichever piece of it that one tries to tackle. But what understandings need to be surfaced first to make formal collaboration a good idea or a natural next step?
You know, this is Tammy. You know, I think as the foundation has moved forward in different work over the last decade, I think that we've really recognized the value of having people who are impacted by an issue be involved in the decision making around that issue. And so as I am a consumer and family liaison, I was hired to bring in that voice into the work that we do. I don't think we can stress enough in the communities how important it is that the members of the community, and particularly those people that have been in power for a long time, recognize the value of including all of those people who have been traditionally left out and truly giving them a voice, an authentic voice, and allowing and encouraging them to be a significant part of decision making. I just think that we can't minimize how important it is, and not just to speak to it, but to really do it.
I would add to that and compliment what Tammy is saying in that sometimes it's easy to get people to the table, but to keep them at the table can be part of the challenge in terms of working together. And one of the biggest opportunities for keeping people together is having them understand, each individual and each organization who's participating, understand for themselves what the give-get proposition is. They're coming to the table to give something because they have a unique perspective, or their organization provides a unique service, or in the Hogg Foundation's case, there is some money that comes when they come to the table. So there's a different give that each organization and individual provides in a collaborative effort. But for a person to continue participating, they need to understand what they're going to get out of it too. So for the consumer participating, the family member to participating, to the organization leader, to the philanthropist participating, and across all these sectors, having that open dialogue about what are you giving, but what are you getting in return?
So really it has to be made valuable to each individual.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I referenced in my intro the fact that people like to talk collaboration. Katie, you make a nice distinction between collaboration and co-blaboration. C-O-B-L-A-B, and so on. Co-blaboration. So can you say what you mean by that? And Tammy, feel free to jump in with anything from your own experience that serves to illustrate the idea.
Sure. So I would suggest that for an impactful collaboration to occur, we really need to build a process through which individuals and people and organizations come together, they develop those shared goals, align their activities, and then they experience and demonstrate through their data progress. And they're making course corrections along the way. And that would be effective collaboration. If I were going to compare that to what we might call collaboration, if this were not a podcast, but on TV, I would show you a Dilbert cartoon where Dilbert is looking to plan a meeting and he has a meeting to plan a meeting to plan a meeting to plan a meeting. That would be collaboration. And it's fun because I looked up on Urban Dictionary, what does Urban Dictionary in all its wisdom call is collaboration? And it's the conversation held between two or more people who discuss ideas and possible collaborative activities only to have all efforts fall flat and nothing ever become of it. That would be collaboration. And I just love that definition. Or when you're halfway into the collaboration and you realize nothing is going to come of this, and you stay, that would be another example of collaboration, which I think most of us has experienced.
Oh, I think we're all very familiar with
that. Yeah, I think you forgot the pre-meeting huddle up.
Well, there you go. Right.
Yeah, I think, you know, meeting to meeting to meeting is completely ineffective. And, you know, I know that as an organization, we tend to feel like we need to meet in order to make decisions. And so we have a lot of meetings in order to make a lot of decisions. I don't think we want to mimic that in our communities. I think that we want to get into the communities. And although we want to allow enough time for planning and development, because we really do want to really resource that so that relationships are developed and people do develop those shared goals like you're talking about, I don't think we want to get into a situation where we're planning to plan to plan and nothing ever happens. Because not only that, that's not going to feel good to the people participating. And when you mentioned, Katie, when you mentioned being able to keep people at the table, there has to be a balance between action and planning. Because if people think that you're not actually going to do anything, they're not going to continue to come. So I think you're right. I think we have to strike a balance there as well.
Okay. Great. And so my next question, successful collaboratives call for a particular approach to leadership, a systems approach. How do you distinguish organizational from systems leadership? And is there a roadmap for developing the competencies that make a systems leader?
I would suggest that one of the largest differences between a systems leader and an organization leader is the focus of your view. And when a person is an organization leader, their view is the organization and that they're working within and the staff and maybe the volunteers, and that's what they're really looking at. And they're looking at maybe how their organization can impact the community or the people around them or their partner base. But when you're trying to be a systems leader, we really want folks to see that broader system that an organization is working in. And that's really essential to building a shared understanding of what the complex problems are out there, sort of lifting your head above the organization and looking to the broader system. The other one is that's a difference is really being open to fostering deeper conversations and being more reflective in your dialogues. So holding up the mirror and not having assumptions that you take for granted and looking at those assumptions and saying, is this true? Do we need to discuss our assumptions? Do we need to open our minds to other things that might be the case and really be reflective in that? And that's a big way to build trust too. So as an individual, you're not just coming in with your own biases and expectations. And really looking at stopping, oftentimes as an organizational leader, it's easy to fall into reactive problem solving. So there's a problem and that occurs and you react to it and come up with a solution. When we're talking about a systems leader, we need to be able to look past the problems also and really look to the vision of what we could accomplish together and live in that tension between reality and what your vision could be. That's a significant piece of being a systems leader. In terms of your question related to sort of what's the roadmap for systems leader, there's an excellent book that I would recommend listeners looking up, which is called Leading from the Emerging Future. And it references really three openings that need to occur within a systems leader to be able to transform whatever system they're looking in or working in. And I think these are really interesting. The first one is opening the mind. So a system leader needs to be able to open their mind, and that gets to the assumptions, coming into something with an open mind rather than a closed mind and testing those assumptions. The second one is opening the heart. And I really think that one's interesting, that you come forward in a very vulnerable position and really be open to hearing the voices of the folks you normally talk to, but then sometimes very divergent perspectives as well. And then the third one being opening the will. So letting go of your own preset goals and your own agenda and saying, I can bring forward my will to see what's needed and possible and move in that direction.
Boy, I really like that, particularly the last one. I think that we as a foundation have spent a good chunk of time over the last year really thinking through our strategy, going through a strategic planning process, and trying to get to a place where we were thinking broader and trying to think about how we could make an impact prior to people getting to a place of needing services and all of the things that we've traditionally been very focused on, making sure that people have been included and at the table in terms of the types of services that are available, the diversity of the services, the diversity of the people offering services, increasing the workforce, all of those things that were really about reacting to a situation that was already there, right? And so part of what I think has been really interesting for us is to kind of suspend that for a little while and think further back. What are these big issues that are in play that can increase or decrease someone's resiliency or their mental health or their well-being? And what kind of role could we play in helping to establish a healthier environment? And as you're talking through those openings of a systems leader, I feel like we're positioned really well right now, just as a full staff, primarily because we've gone through this process together and really looked at suspending our own judgment amongst each other and recognizing that, you know, we do come to the table with preconceived ideas, and sometimes those have to be questioned, and most of the time those have to be questioned. I think the idea of opening heart, which kind of, for me, goes back to the whole idea of authentic listening and really hearing someone's experiences, and as much as you can feel them, allow yourself to feel them. And then that opening your will, that has been particularly interesting to me as we've tried to create a vision, as we've gone through this process of trying to develop a project out of our new strategic plan, and recognizing that the vision is we want a community to create the vision. And that's a challenging place to be because people want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the best thing. And so trying to allow ourselves to sit in a place where we don't have all the answers and we want to learn alongside all of the people that we're doing this work with, and to get them to recognize that they really are the experts and that they're the ones that are going to come up with solutions. It's just an interesting juxtaposition to be in.
So. It kind of reminds me back to your first question about what are we looking for an impactful collaboration? And one of those first ones being those shared goals,
yes,
that the community needs to come up with. And
right.
So it's not the goals that somebody is giving you,
right,
based on what they see as the problem, but what do we collectively as a community want to set out there as our vision? And what are our goals that we want to move towards? That,
yes,
it's an exciting challenge.
It is. It's an exciting time. It's exciting to think that we could really implement some things that could make a difference.
Okay, so there is no recipe for a successful collaborative, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that there aren't things to be kept in mind as one proceeds to enter into one. And so Tammy and Katie, this was a wonderful conversation. And I thank you very much for taking the time to make this maybe a little bit more concrete. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.